Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman, and my co-host here on the other line with me, 8.9 seconds writer, Indiana sports coverage writer, Pacers aficionado, Tony East. Tony, how are you doing? I know you're moving today, so how are you?
Good, Adam. I'm struggling to get Wi-Fi, so I'm moving around the city to do this wherever I can, but I'm doing well.
So are you in your basement at home still doing this, or are you in your new apartment?
I am back in the basement to order Wi-Fi for the apartment today. It's fun.
Nice. All right, let's just get right into it. So you've, for the past, I think now going on 2 weeks now, you've written a series of basically breaking down every contract on the Pacers, and you've done best, worst, whatever, you know. It's been 8 points. I think it's been really good. So I asked you, you know, before the show to kind of break them up into tiers. That's what you wanted to do. So can you explain the three tiers of Pacer contracts?
Yeah, so what I've been doing every other day is – just breaking down a player, like why they're getting paid, and then if their contract is fair for what they're paid, and then what to look for them in the future. And for our podcast, I wanted to go through three tiers of players on the Pacers contract-wise, and that is underpaid, fairly paid, and overpaid. And if you've been following the team or the series at all, you know that they have quite a few players in every group, which is good and bad. So I don't know, what group you want to start with?
Let's go with underpaid first, because I think I know who overpaid is. So I want to end with this. Let's start with underpaid. Who do you got?
Okay. So the challenge with underpaid is, like, of course, like Miles Turner and TJ Leaf and, you know, those guys are underpaid because their contract is artificially set by the rookie scale. So you have to find a guy who's not making, you know, their value, but they got signed to, like, they chose to sign that contract. And I guess the biggest two that are in that group that aren't rookies would be Corey Joseph and Glenn Robinson, but the big one is definitely GR3.
How much is GR3 making this year, and how much is Corey Joseph making?
I think GR3. Like GR3 had a team option at the minimum this year, so if he got hurt last year, they could have just cut him. But he's been awesome and worth way more than the minimum. And Corey Joseph's making about $7.5 million with a player option. And he's probably, like, you know, as good as Collison. They should be making about the same, but that player option kind of makes it even because, you know, if everything goes terribly for Corey Joseph this year, he still knows he can make almost $8 million next year.
Yeah, so Joseph kind of has more guaranteed money, actually, than Collison, because Collison only has, like, 12 guaranteed for the next two seasons versus Joseph has, I guess, 18 or 15, really, right?
Yeah, Joseph's is 7.5. 6 million this year and then 7.95 next year. So basically 13, a little over 13 million for Joseph, or 14, sorry.
Yeah, 14. I was the math expert.
Whoops. Yeah, we need a math guy on here today.
No, actually, I think it's a little over 15. It's 15 and a half.
Let me break out the old calculator. Yeah, you're right. So I have a salary formula. I don't know how great it actually is. But it says that Glenn Robinson, of his fair salary, is about, $9 million, basically. And he's making a little over 1.5 this next year. I mean, that's a steal. That's $8 million of cap space free, basically, you know?
So how do you get to the $9 million number? I mean, I'm going to look at Robinson's stats, obviously. Is it just based on his stats, PER? Like, I know you've got some formula.
I did a trend line between production based off of NBA match TPA combined with age, as well as I forget one other thing. Oh, degree of difficulty of minutes. It's pretty complicated, but Glenn Robinson got about $9.65 million actually for next year would be his projected salary based on it, and he's only making 1.5. So, for just pretend that, you know, he is $8 million of free cap space because he's not paid fairly, and they were able to use that cap space to get Corey Joseph. You know. That's
yeah.
Huge.
Or you even look at it like because he's so underpaid, they were able to bring in a small forward at the same caliber as him and Bojan Bogdanovic, because basically Bogdanovic makes about $10 million. That's probably what Robinson should be making.
Yeah.
A little they can now have two, you know, decent small forwards instead of having just one by when they have to pay Robinson probably next year a ton of money.
Right, and I like
these salary figures because you don't pay guys for what they have contributed. You pay guys for what they're going to contribute, and because Robinson is only 24, you know he could get better and foreseeably contribute more money, so you'd like to see that for him.
So with Robinson, do you think there's a chance that he – what's probably his next contract looking like? 4 years, 40, 4 years, 50 maybe?
Yeah, that you know, a lot depends on this season, and it's funny because, you know, with Bogdanovic, if the Pacers start Bogdanovic every game, that kind of makes Robinson look worse. Like, it's not his fault, but just because he's not starting and, like, accumulating those counting stats by playing a ton of minutes. So, in a way, they're almost, like, keeping his contract down on purpose so they could re-sign him. I would guess, yeah, 4 for 40, 4 for 50, somewhere in that range for him next year, just because he's only going to be 25. He'll be hitting his prime, and he's a good player. He can defend and score on the wing. Like, that's a really hard player to find.
I think part of it, too, this season will be sort of like he's playing for his contract. So, like, he doesn't get the minutes because he's not playing well, he won't get a good contract. But if he starts playing well, his minutes will go up, and then his contract will go up next year. So, I mean, if he ends up playing 25 minutes a game and putting up between 8 and 10 points, he could probably get between I'm thinking 12 and 15, unless he's an unrestricted free agent, right?
Yeah, he'll be unrestricted, but they'll have his bird rights.
Deals.
What?
He could get kind of a crazy deal out there, right?
Yeah, there could be, but there's not a lot of teams with space, and the Pacers have his bird rights, right? So if they wanted, they could foreseeably use, because his cap holds the minimum, they could use their 40-odd whatever mill of space they end up having next year and then re-sign him to whatever he wants. They could just tell him that and get him, you know?
Okay, yeah. I mean,
like I'd imagine on the first day of free agency, Kevin Pritchard talks to Glenn Robinson and says, we're going to pay you to bring you back. Just relax. We're not going to pay you now because you have to sign other guys first.
Yeah, I mean, you got to hope he is okay with that kind of thing, because he hasn't really made very much money in the NBA. He was a second round pick, probably has made a combined million. It's probably his highest paid year is this season.
It is, yeah. And so, you know, there's two sides to that, because yes, there has to be trust from him, and it's like, okay, I'm finally getting paid. But the other side is like the Pacers saved his career, right? Like, he was nobody with the Sixers. They cut him, and then the Pacers picked him up, and he's been great when he started and all that stuff. I mean, you got to think he kind of owes something to the Pacers at the same time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and he's sort of a hometown kid, too. He's from the area. And we've seen when Lance, for example, when a player that's plays really well in Indiana in the system and then kind of leaves and then kind of ruins his value completely. So I think there's a great chance he re-signs because the cap space and everything, but he has to obviously play well this year because, you know, we're hoping he's like he was last year, but if he doesn't play at that level, he might not re-sign.
There's a lot to that. Like the Heat have that culture thing too, where it's like you come to the Heat and you bring up your value and then they pay you for it. Like, it looks good for the Pacers to bring up this guy's value and pay him, because then other players who feel like they're undervalued might come here for that reason, you know?
Yeah, and especially because if the Pacers can prove they can hit on these second-round picks, you know, build Lance, Glenn Robinson, two of the past, kind of these fringe NBA players who weren't high draft picks but had talent, players might want to come here. Like, oh, I'm a second-round pick and I get cut, I can come there and kind of develop me into a decent NBA player, and I'll get a nice contract next time.
Yeah, that it was a big deal. That would be huge. I mean, it's worked well for the Heat. They keep getting guys under value every year, so maybe that'll work out nicely for them.
Yeah, it just builds a culture. All right, let's move on to your second category. Let's just do the fairly paid players. So
our fairly paid players. We could start with Collison, I guess. I had Collison in my formula at about $10.3 million, and he's making $10 million. So I think he's pretty fairly paid, and, you know, his role is kind of this bridge point guard. I wrote about this, is kind of to bridge the gap between the old era of the Pacers and the new era, and they could have just signed a young guy to a long-term deal, but I kind of like the idea of having Collison to come in and, you know, kind of teach some guys about the NBA and the Pacers, because he's played here before. So they're just paying him, you know, fair money to be a quality veteran.
Yeah, I'm thinking probably the Pacers have a bad year next year, or not even a bad year, just where there's a lot of deep point guards in this year's draft. They draft a point guard, and Collison kind of becomes – they bring him back one year, and he kind of becomes the leader, like the transition guy that kind of helps bring in – you know, helps a young point guard develop. Because the Pacers really haven't had a good point guard in who knows how many. I mean, George Hill was okay, but they haven't really had like a good pure point guard. And so Collison, I mean, I love George Hill, but he wasn't, he was more of a two in my mind, really. And they kind of played him at point guard. He was a much better off the ball player at times, but Collison is more of a traditional true point guard. And if the Pacers bring in a rookie, I'd say, in the draft next year, he kind of helped mentor that guy into the next level.
Right, and you wrote about that, right? The Colin Sexton. I know that was like a goofy little piece, but the Colin Sexton pick.
Yeah,
that made me look. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, he was just. I was just looking at draft picks next year because, right? If like I was looking at if Glenn Robinson comes back, Turner comes back, you know, where the need for the Pacers, they're not going to draft a center. They're not going to draft a small forward, which is usually where most of the really talented players are, and so. You know, they're going to try to get a point guard, I assume, if there's a good one out there. And so he was the best one, I think, in college, or at least in the ESPN rankings.
Yeah, it's him, and I guess you could say Doncic is like a combo guard, and then Trayvon Duval. But, there's like pretty good point guards in this coming draft, and that's kind of why I think they did what they did with Collison. It's like, okay, we only want you for 1 year, and paying good players for 1 year is hard because they want to get – longer-term deals in case they get hurt. So they kind of slightly overpaid him to be that veteran bridge guy, but that's a good deal. That's a good value for a guy like that, about $10 million.
Yeah, maybe Kevin Pritchard is sort of looking ahead, which you hope he is, but maybe he is really thinking that kind of far ahead where it's like, we can't get a good point guard in this year, but we can draft one next year for between the 6th and 10th pick, which is probably where they're going to be. And I imagine, like you said, Duval or Sexton will be there. And I'm sure other point guard will pop.
Yeah, and, maybe Corey Joseph's just as good as him, but you got to think the player option makes them kind of scared of Corey Joseph just because I don't know if they want him back or not. They got him for nothing, so, like, of course that's good value for him, but it's hard to say what the deal with him is.
Yeah.
I think he's fairly paid too, but the player option is just so scary because player options, it's impossible for them to work out for the team. That's the whole point of it.
Yeah, but like you said, they have a ton of cap space next year. Even if they had three point guards per se, Collison, Joseph, and a rookie – I don't necessarily that'd be terrible because the rookie counter is not going to be that much. It's going to be a lower deal anyways, and you don't want, you know what I mean? So I think
rookie point guards suck. Like they always are just terrible, except for like Chris Paul. It takes him a while to get,
used
to
him. So like, I mean, you're probably going to cut or not re-sign Joe Young at the end of next year. So if Joseph opts into one more season and he plays well enough to opt into it or even is just decent, I mean like, and because the cap space Pacers are going to have, I don't think it's that big of a deal. I wouldn't be – it's not like he's opting into like a $25 million option, like a Carmelo type of thing. He's opting into like $8 million. That's like not even – that's like a 12th of the cap, basically.
Right. You know who else is pretty fairly paid in my formula? Joe Young. Ironically. He's a minimum player.
But is he even worth that? He doesn't even play games.
But the thought with him before was that he had potential on offense, and he kind of does, but – he's so bad on defense, so I don't know. I think the fairly paid category is the smallest one for the team because, I mean, we talked about Collison, and then I think they overpaid slightly for Bojan, and, I think they're overpaying slightly for Lance. And it's a tough group. It's a small group. Thad Young probably in that group too, but like Corey Joseph, he has that player option, so he's really hard to – evaluate if he's fairly paid because he could end up screwing the team if he opts in.
I'm not going to argue about Lance because we'll do it sometime this season. Let's move on to the overpay. You kind of gave
it a whole podcast about arguing about Lance.
I've sort of been marking off players in my head based on what you just said of who's in your overpay category. So why don't you? I'm assuming your overpay category has got Jefferson, Oladipo, and then anybody else.
Those are the two. So I talked about this last week with you. Oladipo is the hope is that he grows and becomes worth that value because it's hard to get wings that are as good at scoring as him in general. And Al Jefferson, there's just no hope. He actually was second to last on the team and worst value on the team, but last was Monta Ellis, who's already gone. So, he got rated as a minimum player through the system. That's really bad. The fact that he's making 4 million this year is just awful.
Yeah, Jefferson, he's
9.7.
That contract, I remember him signing when he had a contract, and I thought, oh, it's not a bad deal. They're bringing in a veteran guy. Maybe it can be like Jan Mahimi. And, I mean, he's just nothing like Jan Mahimi. He's just got no – I know Jan Mahimi was not good this year for the Wizards, but when he was, the year before, Jan Mahimi's probably worth $10 million, after his last Pacers season because he was that kind of good on defense and had a decently – decent ability to score the ball. But Jefferson's not even worth that.
In the league that year, he was awesome.
Yeah. So they sort of paid Jefferson to replace Mahimi, and it just, they're two different style of players, and it doesn't really make sense now in hindsight, because you don't, Jefferson's not like ever been a defensive first kind of center. He's never been the gritty go get down. I mean, he's been a really good scorer. Like, he was just one of the better scoring centers in the league. He wasn't necessarily one of those better gritty in the mud getting fouled all the time type of centers.
Well, and it's tough too with Al, because if he had showed up and been had his normal "I'm 31 now" decline, that would have been fine. But he also had that combined with the fact that he just was so out of shape he couldn't play, right? And I wrote about that because his per 36 stats look awesome. Like, when he plays, he was at least decently effective. He just couldn't stay on the court, and it was so bad.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of any NBA player's being able to stay on the court. Towards the beginning of last season, Jefferson had a decent start. He was able to put in 8 or 10 points a game off the bench, which is what you kind of want. But once he stopped being able to have any kind of lateral quickness or anything, then he got hurt, and it just went down from there. And so maybe he's in better shape this year. You know, I don't want to not – I mean, you know, he is an NBA player. He has been in the league a long time. He knows what it takes. So maybe he's in better shape, and we're knocking him right now, and he comes in and he plays 60 to 65 games, which is what you'd kind of expect out of a guy like him. But I wouldn't bet money on it.
If you think of it like this for him too, because he's non-guaranteed, it's sort of like a contract year for him, right? Because he has $10 million on a contract next year and only $4 million guaranteed. So if he plays really well, I mean, there's almost no way he plays well enough to get worth $10 million, but he could, right? Maybe he shows up in shape and works his ass off and becomes that player.
But does he really need the money? I mean, he's probably made a ton of money over his career, right? I'm looking at
borderline
it.
I forget which team it was. He got the borderline max, but I think it was the Timberwolves.
Yeah. Well, Timberwolves, and then he got traded to the Jazz. He's made $120 million in his career up to last season. So wow. I think, you know, yeah,
but
you're saying
contract season,
but he's maybe doesn't care. You know, he's 35. He's made a lot of money. He can retire.
31. He could make it. He could probably get one more deal, but it would be like the minimum for a team that needs a veteran center, because his per 36 stats look okay. Like, okay, the Heat could whip him into shape with their incredible get-you-into-shape doctors that they seem to always have, and then make him effective off their, like, third center.
Yeah, I think his destiny is probably to be get that veteran minimum, whatever, and be kind of the rah-rah bench guy for a couple seasons maybe, because he does have some leadership to him. I would say he's a pretty decent leader in the locker room.
He's great in the deep post, and if you have like a young center that needs to be taught how to play in the deep post, I think Al Jefferson on the vet minimum would be a steal next summer just to teach him some of those post moves. And yeah, look, I mean, at that, the Heat just drafted a center. I think this is destiny now.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the young centers. I mean, there's going to be a couple in the draft next year that they're going to want to bring in a guy to kind of help lead those guys. I mean, he could even go someplace like, I guess KG is still in Minnesota, so he's kind of mentoring Towns, but that's kind of the thought. Like, that kind of mentorship is what you want from Jefferson to somebody.
Exactly, exactly. I'd like to give an honorable mention in this overpay group if I'm allowed to.
Go ahead.
Monte Ellis making $2.3 million to not play a single game.
Yeah, well, it's better than having to try to fit him into the lineup, because he was pretty bad out there too.
He was the biggest overpay by quite a bit last year. It's funny because so I set it up at first so that it just spit out like compared to your production, what your salary should be. And it could come out a negative number before I like made it a formula, you know, so you had to make the minimum.
Yeah.
And his Monte Ellis should have had a salary of negative $10,600,000. He should have been paying the Pacers $10 million for that level of terrible production he gave last year.
Yeah. I mean, Monte Ellis is a classic case of the sports contracts work is you basically end up paying for past production a lot of times. And he was kind of, that's what he got.
Yeah.
So like, it's kind of, when you're talking about Oladipo, you're like, you're paying for him to get better. That doesn't, to play up to his contract, that doesn't provide a lot of hope for me. It doesn't sound good to me. Cause it's like, most of the time in the NBA, you're paying for what a player did in the past, not because you want them to be a max player. Like in football, for example, like Tavon Austin was signed to a max contract wide receiver. And basically like people kept saying, well, they want him to be a number one, but he's not. So why are they paying him up to that? Like, it makes me nervous when anybody says they want him to play up to his contract.
Yeah, and the two thoughts with Larry Bird's big discipline is that he signed guys who had high points per game. Well, he also paid guys for their past production, not their future production, and that's what bad GMs do, not what good GMs do.
Well, and the thing about Home Depot is you didn't really pay him for pass production. He doesn't really have like a great pass production. You're just paying for him to hopefully be a 20-point guy and to keep improving, which I mean,
I think well. I think you have to assume he will just because his usage was took such a tank in Oklahoma City, and you know he was playing a role that is not a Victor Oladipo role of like literally never getting the ball.
Yeah, but I don't know if he's still 21 million. He's going to be 21 million a year good because
oh, no, absolutely not.
Because he was a part, he did something with Jefferson. He's part of that huge overpay year where he basically got overpaid by Oklahoma City. One, because they wanted to convince the fans they had a number two and they lost KD and they thought the cap was going to go up to be $130 million. So they didn't care. So he's part of that. So, you know, I mean, there's going to be few guys last year that aren't max guys that are going to live up to their contracts because everybody got so overpaid.
All right. I just checked. What do you think Oladipo's league wide worth value is?
Between 15 and 17.
15.3.
Nailed it.
Pretty good. So I mean, guess what Sabonis's was before the All-Star break.
Okay. See, I mean, part of it is maybe Sabonis lives up to above his contract and then it weighs out that trade. It just – the underrated part of the whole Paul George trade was just how much money Oladipo was going to make. If Oladipo was making 15 to 17 a year, it'd be like, oh, cool. You just got a quality, you know, shooting guard for Paul George. You know, it's not great, but it's something. But you're kind of overpaying him and – you know, don't know how great he is.
So pre All-Star break, Sabonis had a contract value of expected of $13.4 million, and after the All-Star break, it was $5 million. So what version of Sabonis are we going to get is going to be a big question. But he's on the rookie scale; impossible to evaluate his contract.
Yeah, well, if you want to know later this week, so about any of the players. So for the next 2 weeks, Tony and I are going to be doing Pacer player previews. So basically what it is we're going to do about 30-minute podcast, give or take, on just each – go through basically each individual Pacer player that's on – you know, we're going top 11, I think, is what we determined. We didn't want to go all the way deep into some of those minimum guys that are – we're not sure you're going to make the roster. But so basically before the preseason – first preseason game is October 3rd, so we're going to be doing – starting probably Tuesday, I think Tony's going to come out with the Bojan Bogdanovic podcast. And
Thad
so,
Young is first for me, actually.
Thad Young is?
Yeah.
That's right, Thad Young. I am butchering this. I did it when we talked earlier today too. But who did you interview for that first one?
You'll see Tuesday, but it was another 8 points, 9 seconds writer, Will Furr.
Okay. Yeah, he's so smart guy. So Thad Young, and basically what I'll just be able to talk they'll talk about like the player and kind of what they need to do next season for the Pacers to be successful and talk about some averages and things like that. Just a whole breakdown of each Pacer player because, you know, we're only 2 weeks away, I think, from real basketball beginning. It's not, you know, regular season basketball, but at least something, some preseason games of watching some, you know, non-college football, basically.
I am very excited for the preseason basketball, and I think you guys are going to like this series. I actually already recorded the Thaddeus Young one that's coming out Tuesday. We really went through what he produced last year, how his role changed, how that's going to affect his averages this year, you know, what you should expect to see from him. And yeah, we're going to do that for every player. And we're about to start one actually right now.
Yep. So we'll take a quick break and then we're going to come to you with our first player preview, Miles Turner. SeatGeek is the presenting sponsor of the Locked On Pacers podcast. SeatGeek is one of the best ticket aggregating sites around. You can use it to buy tickets to sporting events, concerts, and more. I've used it, like I said, in the past. I bought Kendrick Lamar tickets with it. I bought Pacers tickets. I bought Red tickets with it. I will probably use it to buy Colts tickets at some point this year. If I go, you know, depending on how good they are. But Tony has been saying he's going to use it. So, Tony, have you used SeatGeek yet?
Adam, I still have not used SeatGeek.
So, a great part of SeatGeek is that you can really buy up to the last minute. So, you know, I know Pacers games haven't started yet. So, you're probably going to go IMN to a bunch of them. I mean, I would love to go as many as I can, too. But you can literally buy for like the last hour. So you can just be like, okay, I'm going to go to the game maybe. And then you decide in like an hour before the game, like, all right, for sure going to go. You start driving, then you buy tickets online. Boom, boom, you're in your seats, you know, for now. And then if you moved basically next to the stadium, you can probably decide like 10 minutes before the game.
I did. I can see it out my window. You lean the right way.
Yeah, so on a 7 o'clock start, Tony can basically at like 6:45 be like, all right, you know what? I want to go to the game. Start walking over there. Pull the app on his phone. Start looking at tickets. See what gets the best deal from. Boom, buy tickets. Perfect. It's like, it's really easy. And if you use the promo code LOMBA, you can get, I believe, a $10 discount off your tickets. So use the promo code LOMBA. That helps support this podcast and all kinds of stuff like that. And so I hope Tony will use SeatGeek. I know I will be using it this year, and hope whoever's out there listening will use it when they go to the next Pacer game this season. And now back to the Locked On Pacers podcast. All right, so
it's time to break down Miles Turner. It is time to do the best player on the team next year.
Yeah, so Miles Turner, I'll do a little just background on. So 2 years, in the second year in the league. I was looking up some stats from him. I've been kind of trying to find player comparisons to him. So, you know, there's the guys in the league now. So Kristaps and Towns kind of compare him, but they kind of exceeded Turner the first two seasons because – Towns might be one of the best 20 players in the league currently, and Kristaps is up there and trying to get up there. But so I kind of looked at Roy Hibbert's past, give him to a Pacer, Jermaine O'Neal kind of thing to compare him to Pacers. I saw somebody had him at like Patrick Ewing comparison, but, you know, it's hard to compare Turner to anybody because he came out when he was 19. So it's kind of dumbfounding to think how impressive he was last season. He was basically only 20 years old. So he's the same age as me, and he put up almost 15 points a game in the NBA. You know, I know Towns did kind of the same thing in Kristaps, but just doing that is extremely impressive. And I think Pacer fans kind of went numbed on it about how like extraordinary it is to see a guy who's that young putting up those kind of stats. And so, you know, next season, obviously you want to see him progress. And so the best comparison I actually could find was I took kind of Jermaine O'Neal from when he first joined the Pacers. So Jermaine's first year with the Pacers, he averaged 12 points. And then he went the next season, put up 19 and then 20. And so that's what you want to see from Turner, kind of make that 15-point leap to 20. And so, Tony, just the first question to you is, how does Turner go from 15 points a game to maybe 20 points a game?
Well, the obvious answer is that his role has changed. He's no longer the second or third option behind Paul George and, I guess, Jeff Teague. Now he's either the first or second option, depending on who's in the game. And even eventually he could be over Victor Oladipo. That depends on – you know, how Nate McMillan handles it and how it shakes out. And that will be a huge thing for him, is just having the ball more. I mean, it sounds so obvious, but that's just kind of how, you know, scoring in the NBA works. I mean, Miles Turner's usage actually went down from his rookie year to last year. So, you know, you got to think he's going to be way higher than 19.5% usage next year, and that will just naturally bring up his points a little bit.
Yeah, and if you look at it, so he probably done it. I think he took a total of, I had the number down, I think it was about 11 shots a game, give or take, about his field goal attempts, and he shot about 50% overall. So if he now gets end up shooting, let's say 15 to 17 shots a game, so let's take 15 shots a game, and let's say he even shoots a little bit better, like 55%, you know, that right there, he's at 18 to 19 points a game right off the bat. And that's saying he doesn't shoot more threes, doesn't get the line more. I mean, that's all these things that happen when you become kind of a more veteran player in his third season, where he learns how to draw fouls better and all that type of stuff.
So the fear for me is Nate McMillan, of course. I don't want to bash him this whole time, but, you know, he's never showed me that he can, like, tap into what guys' skills and make them, you know, really use their assets to become better, because I'd like him to say, hey, Miles Turner, stop shooting that 21-foot top of the key shot and just take a step back behind the three-point line and shoot the same thing, you know, because that would also help quite a bit. I mean, he's a good three-point shooter for a big man. You want him to be out there. And he's really good from the top of the key. That's basically his highest percentage zone on his shot chart. So you'd like to see him, you know, get that shot more if McMillan can really force him to do it.
Yeah, you would like to see him shoot almost – I like to see him at least shoot three threes a game maybe. I mean, he shot about 1.5 his average last year. But if he could double that, because, you know, he shoots a ton of top of the key shots. I like to call the David West shot. That was David West's favorite shot, was like right above the free throw line. But he was so money from it, you let him take it.
Yeah.
But if Turner could take a step back and shoot some of those as threes and, you know, shoot, even not even have to shoot an extraordinary, maybe like 35% from three, you know, his number, that would also improve.
Same as last year. The same shooting percentage he had last year, just with more attempts per game, would be great.
Yeah. And I also think, I mean, in the offseason, he said he's been working on his post-up game. So I wonder if he's going to bring another kind of another weapon to his offensive game, because if you think about it, if he starts making those threes and then he learns how to post up guys, you know, defenders are going to have trouble on him. I mean, especially if they respect his jump shot, he's going to be able to drive past this because he's quick and he's got long legs and he's able to kind of make a quick step to the rim. And so, you know, if he brings all that kind of this whole kind of like modern center thing with him, you know, he could jump above 20 points a game, assuming he gets the right amount of shots.
Yeah, well, it's funny because we just said that this, but hit most of his shots, like the highest percentage of his shots come from between 16 feet and the three-point line, you know, and you'd kind of hope that highest percentage of his shots would be either threes or right around the basket. So you kind of got to hope that, like you said, if he does work on that post game, he can take more shots down there, because he takes less than 30% of his shots at the rim, and yet he's, what, 6'11", 7 feet tall? You know, you'd kind of hope he'd be in there banging around a little more, getting some post buckets, kind of looking more like Al Jefferson does. I can't believe I just said that out loud. But
he's also – I think some of that is his rookie kind of – when you're new in the league, you do what's comfortable. I think he's a comfortable jump shooter. You know, you see that, Adam. Yeah. He's comfortable going, taking that 15-foot shot. And he probably didn't think he had the size to go bang up against guys, but I think he's getting there now. I mean, I saw him at the Nike unveil, you know, his picture. He looked like he's getting bigger. I mean, he's definitely putting on some muscle. The Pacers do a good job of helping their centers get bigger. They did that with Roy Hibbert. But, you know, he's got to be able to draw fouls. I mean, that's what separates, you know, decent NBA players from great NBA players, is the ability to draw the foul. That's been Paul George's biggest weakness his entire career, is he doesn't get draw enough fouls. But like somebody like James Harden, you know, he draws like 14 free throws a game, almost, it feels like. So, you know, if he's able to get down there and make post-up plays and get fouls, his point numbers will go up, because free throws are easy points for a guy like him who has a pretty good jump shot.
Yeah, I agree with that. He shoots 70% at the rim, you know, like even if he's down there and he gets fouled, like it's pretty close in value between two free throw shots for him and a shot at the rim. So that's, you know, you got to think that is interesting. You said he got to get more free throws. His free throw attempt rate last year was great. 35% is nuts. And if you want a quick comparison, Porzingis' free throw attempt rate was only 25%. He got to the line 10% on more of his touches than Kristaps did.
Yeah, but I'm thinking, like, so he averaged about 4 free throws a game, right, give or take. You know, he obviously, I guess, when you think about his touching-wise, you factor that in, and if he gets more touches, he's going to get, you know, more like 6. But if he gets up to 8 free throw attempts a game and he can shoot, he shot 80% from the line last season, that's, you know, that's 4 extra free points, basically.
Yeah, that – I guess that stat is skewed kind of by a small sample, but not a huge amount. That would be nice, just because he's so skilled at the free throw line. Like I said, you want to get him to his assets. He's already decent at that. You're right. He could get a little better, but you know, being the first option, it's kind of hard. And when you're that good at free throw shooting, guys intentionally try not to foul you, which is a challenge for him too.
Yeah, but that will help open up get some of those easy hooks. He's got pretty good touch around the rim too. So that, definitely, you know, he's one of the more skilled offensive big men in the league in a while. I think we've really, you know,
absolutely,
we've seen. I mean, that's why, you know, people are so optimistic about what he can do, because he's not one of those big men that kind of doesn't have any feel when he gets close to the rim. You know, Turner's got that little bit float touch. You know, he has a little bit of an awkward jump shot, but it goes in, and he can consistently shoot the same one over again, which is what you need basically. So, you know, I think a lot of it is going to be based on how many touches he gets, right? I mean, like, the free throw thing will be if he gets the ball 20 times down, 20 times a game at least, you know, he'll end up shooting more free throws and stuff like that. So, you know, that's a lot of what it's based on, and that's what the issue is going to be, is whether the point guards can feed in the ball, because as a center, he's going to be so reliant on Kyleton and Oladipo. And so I know you want to talk about it a little bit. So the pick and roll, Oladipo and Turner, I imagine we're going to see a ton of pick and roll type of games, type style from him. You know, you want to take it away on what you think about that?
Yeah, well, I want to talk about projected role with every player we do in this series. And for Miles Turner, like I said earlier, first thought is if he's the first option or second option. But within that is how they get him the ball when he is that option. And the big one will clearly be, to me, the pick and roll and or the pick and pop, depending on what lineup is in and where he can find more space. And, you know, I think he'd be really good there. I mean, he's huge. We already talked about how well he can shoot from deep and at the post. He's a big body. He's agile. He can dab the rim off a screen. And at the same time, Oladipo, you know, is fast and but it's still good enough that you have to either switch on him, or you can't just give him the three to stay with Turner. So someone's going to be open on that play, or, you know, it's going to make somebody come help. You know, it's going to open up something that is just a play I feel like you have to run.
Yeah, I'm also excited. I know you're not going to like this, but the Lance and Turner pick and roll, just because Lance's ability to get centers, he did it with Stephen last year, really good looks around the rim and kind of the alley-oop. So I'm not talking about like it's going to be like the most pretty, like they're going to play well, but I mean, like, we might see Stevenson set up in a way Turner to some really highlight type plays, you know, because Stevenson is willing to make that really aggressive, like, shouldn't make the pass, but does, and it goes in, and it barely makes it through, and he dunks it in kind of thing. So that's what I'm excited for to see. But I think Oladipo has some of the same potential as that to work out as the potential pick-and-roll alley-oop kind of guy.
I think those plays will be exciting, and I think that is all I will say about any Lance Stephenson, Miles Turner pick and rolls. I just pulled up NBA Math's player play type profiles, which just kind of runs through where players excel and don't excel. And you got to like what you see in the terms of pick and roll plays for both of these guys. You should check it out if you get a chance. If you hit up the old percentiles, Miles Turner in the pick and roll is above average. And if you look at the pick and roll ball handler for Oladipo, he is in the 60th percentile. So they're both above average at those skills. I mean, that's just something you're going to want to run almost every time down the court if you can, if you're the Pacers.
Yep. And you got to hope Nate McMillan sees that, because
yeah,
that's a big worry. I mean, the big worry is coaching. And, you know, I think Millen's not a great coach, but, you know, I think a lot of it is the system and a little bit of like the way the Pacers develop players. So the Pacers have a good repertoire of building, of kind of developing young players. I mean, you know, they're a team that's never had a pick in the top five and has had really successful top 20 players through that way. So, you know, McMillan might not be the best coach they've had, but I think a lot of it is just the whole system, the way everything is built in Indianapolis is going to be help Turner ultimately.
So before we officially project a season, I think there's two more things we have to talk about, and one's really short, so I'll just nail it out, and then the other one we'll discuss. His defense is just okay, but he did talk on The Jump on Friday about Dan Burke and how Dan Burke's kind of helped him out with his defense. Did you catch that?
I did not catch that, but I know Dan Burke is the defensive guru of this team, and I know the amount they talk about Dan Burke being just like the greatest defensive mind on the Pacers is ridiculous. Larry Bird used to just talk that up like nonstop.
Right, and, you know, Miles Turner's a fine defender. He's probably, you know, one of the best defenders on the team, which is hilarious. But, you know, I kind of hope he takes a step forward there. I mean, he's pretty good at blocks. He's okay at rim protection, but I'd like him to be more agile, a little on the wing and in the mid-range. I'm kind of segueing into the fact that, like every player in the league, Miles Turner has weaknesses as well. We've really hit his strengths and how we think that's going to project this year. But first, you know, you got to hope his defense gets better. And second, I didn't know this until really just now. His rebound rate went down from his rookie year last year. And that's pretty concerning considering that Thad Young's just getting older and none of the other guys in the starting lineup are going to rebound at all. So you got to hope that he's really crashing the boards and getting something, because see that number go down again.
He's going to have to be down there all the time. I mean, you had Paul George a little bit last year who would help rebound and help push the ball up, but Turner's going to be down there botting his way in for every rebound. And so, you know, I'm talking about his defense right now, but that could also translate a little bit into him becoming a ball handler in some sense, because if they want to get the offense flowing a little faster, you could have Turner rebound and just push like they do, like Draymond Green does. So there's that opportunity. So that might be a little bit part of the system is want to get Turner rebounds because he'll start pushing the offense up.
And we've talked about this before, and it's pretty obvious just from general basketball knowledge, is that the Pacers are going to be pretty good on offense, but pretty terrible on defense. And you know how you stop being on defense and get on offense is get rebounds, right? So you're going to need that to be happening. And he's probably he's 100% the best candidate to do that in the starting lineup. So you got to hope that number goes up, because if not, that could be really disastrous for both their defense and just like their overall chances of winning games. I'm looking for other real weaknesses he has. Nothing is really glaring, which is great news. His turnover percentage went down last year. You know, you got to think he's going to improve almost everything, but the rebounding is really concerning to me. Yeah, go ahead.
A little bit is decision-making. So, you know, I know he was young, so I don't want to harp on this too much, because I think a young player should make mistakes. That's part of being a young player. But, you know, he did have times last couple seasons where he kind of would make a mistake in a big moment. You know, I'm just turning the top of my head. He's made a couple, like, he's either thrown the ball out of bounds on a couple big plays towards the end of games. Like, just things that, like, there are obviously young rookie mistakes that he can grow out of very easily as you play more games to get better. But he just has to get better at, you know, end of game situations, like making the right play and, you know, going to the right spot. I mean, he's done it sometimes, so, like, I'm not saying he's bad at it, but I'm just, part of getting better is being better at making, you know, the right pass, the right shot, whatever it is. Because he's going to be maybe the number one guy at the end of a game. So if they're down two, game tied, whatever, 15 minutes left, the ball's going to Turner probably, him or Oladipo, and he's got to figure out what to do with it and make the right play.
You are absolutely right that that's just a youth thing. You know, that'll just grow with age.
You hope that's the thing.
Yeah, and I just looked this up. This is pretty encouraging to me. This is more of a strength than a weakness, but, you know, last season the Pacers were 8.2 points per 100 possessions better with Turner on the court than off. Paul George was only at 9.3. You know, he almost had as big of an impact playing on the court as Paul George did last year. And that's just huge.
Yeah.
And that to me makes him the clear-cut best player on the team.
Yeah, part of that's got to be his shot blocking too. I mean, like, he was a pretty good rim protector last year. And because, I mean, we just have to remember, he was only 20 years old. And the fact that he played at that kind of level, I mean, is awesome. And it's extremely encouraging because if he hasn't even come close to hitting his prime yet. And if he can play at that level at like 20 years old, having been in the league, played maybe 100 games at that well, I mean, imagine what it's going to be like in two seasons from now. I mean, he might be top 15 player in the league.
Yeah, that's the hope. And, you know, we got to project his role for next year in stats. We've already hit the role. You know, if he's going to jump up to that level of the league that we want him to next year, I'm thinking, you know, 20 points, 10 boards, not out of the question. And, you know, pretty reasonable. Honestly, I mean, I don't know if he'll get to the points or the rebounds, but I think he'll get close.
Yeah, I think 20 points is, if he can get close to 20 points, that's a huge sign that he's making the next step. I mean, obviously, if he does more than that, that would be exceptional because we are understanding how many more shots he might get. Like, I had 17 more shots, but he could end up getting 20 shots a game just because of the offense, he's going to maybe be the centerpiece of it at some point. So if he can get the 20 points a game, that'd be incredible. 10 rebounds, obviously. He should be able to get that easily sometimes because, like we said, there's not a lot of rebounders, so we'll have plenty of opportunities. And I want to see him get to probably, like, a little over a block a game. You know, that would be kind of really – that'd be really impressive to keep kind of that pace.
Yeah, he's been close to that his whole career, so I would also keep that up. Yeah, we'll see. He's playing hard. He's hoping to get that rookie extension next summer. So I think it's safe to project him, you know, working his ass off and getting some big money.
Yeah, let's touch on that real quick. So how much money – you've written about this. How much money is Turner going to make?
They better freaking max him. I mean – Just do it. The only reason they'd give him a rookie extension is if they're trying to get him for less than the max, though. So it's interesting to think about how that will go next summer, depending on how the season goes.
Yeah, he's gonna get right 156.
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh. Sure, absolutely.
Unless he drops off, and so I know we didn't really touch on it on our contracts because you said rookie deal and stuff like that. So if Turner makes 28 or whatever, 30, is that undervalued, overvalued based on his stats last season?
Yeah, let me go pull it up. I actually just closed it because you stopped talking. Yeah, his league-wide worth last year was $31 million, and that's more than his max. So you got to think he's getting the max.
Yeah, he's I think he's worth it. So
I do too. Oh, he's absolutely worth it.
So, well, we'll definitely see what happens. Turner is definitely going to hopefully be the best player on the Pacers next season. I know you have outside hope for Oladipo to be their best player, but I think for this team to be in the right direction, you want Turner to be the best player.
No. Best offensive player, Oladipo, not overall player.
Oh, well, I mean, I think just in general, if for the future of the Pacers and, you know, hope going forward, you want Turner to be the best player on the team, maybe on both sides of the ball, just because then it gives you a lot of hope. And
yes, I agree.
So, well, we, like I said, though, is going to be more Pacer previews this week. Tony's gonna post his Thad Young one on about Tuesday. We decided, I think, over this podcast all of a sudden. And there'll be more throughout the week. Basically, we're gonna cover all 11 players over the next probably 2 to 3 weeks because try to get them all done before the October 3rd preseason game, October 4th, the first preseason game. So that's kind of the plan. You know, the NBA season is right around the corner. I'm getting excited. You know, I'm a Colts fan, so football stinks. So I'm getting excited for the NBA season. Just I've missed NBA basketball. You know, football's been kind of boring right now. There's been like maybe one good football game all year. So I'm getting excited. And I know, Tony, I mean, how excited are you for the NBA season?
My gosh, I don't like other sports either. That's another big part of this for me. So I'm so excited.
What
Eurobasket's over today, too. We're doing this during the title game for Eurobasket. So.
Oh, yeah. So for your place, are you getting anything special NBA league pass wise? Or I don't know. I mean, I know you're moving in and getting set up. Are you doing anything, you know, NBA special wise for your
cable? I'll have to see. I have to have Wi-Fi first before I can.
That's the first step. That's right.
There are steps involved. Of course, I'm going to get Pacers League Pass, though.
All right. Well, I know you're busy moving, so get back to moving so that you can have Wi-Fi next week when we do this podcast again.
Guys, get excited for the player previews. They're going to be fun. We're going to have guests so you don't have to hear our voices every freaking time there's one of these podcasts.
Yeah. You know what? I think they might like our voices, but I do agree we need to add a little spice. And when the season starts, I think there's going to be a ton more podcasts on this network, and there'll probably be a lot more guests because, I mean, I think we'll be able to find people who want to talk about the Pacers because, you know, they're going to be an exciting kind of interesting team, especially in the city. And I think we'll have a plethora of guests to come listen to the Pacers.
I agree. I think it'll be very fun.
Yep. All right, Tony, get back to moving. And thank you for listening to today's podcast. You know, if you have any comments or suggestions or whatever, make sure you leave it on our iTunes or Stitcher page. I think you can also do it on Audioboom. You can leave a comment, you know, any suggestions for how to make the podcast better. Make sure to subscribe. You can follow our Twitter at @LockedOn_Pacers. @LockedOn_Pacers. And remember, we're always brought to you by SeatGeek. SeatGeek is a great ticket buying site for concerts and sports. This has been the Locked On Pacers podcast for this week. Have a wonderful rest of your day.